An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Tahui, reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 31.
Release. In our family, there is indeed a subtle marvel not transmitted. It wouldn't help even if the sky became my mouth, and grass, trees, pebbles, and stones all emitted light to help me expound the truth. Thus we believe that this thing cannot be transmitted and cannot be studied. It requires one's own realization and enlightenment. Be sure to remember the words of the previous day. In principle, it's sudden enlightenment, taking advantage of enlightenment to clear everything away. In the event, phenomena are not suddenly removed, but exhausted gradually. Whether you're walking, standing, sitting, or lying down, you must not forget. You don't have to seek special excellence or extraordinary wonders besides. Master Shuai Lao asked Mao Tzu, "What is the true meaning of the coming from the West?" Mao Tzu then knocked him down with a kick to the chest. Shuai Lao was greatly enlightened. He got up, clapping his hands and laughing loudly, and said, "How extraordinary! How wonderful!" Instantly, on the tip of a hair, I've understood the root source of myriad states of concentration and countless subtle meanings. Then he bowed and withdrew. Afterwards, he would tell the assembly, "From the time I took Mao Tzu's kick up until now, I haven't stopped laughing."
Last night, it rained cats and dogs. I have always wondered from where this phrase may have come. There is only one possible source, and that is in the fables of Aesop. A cat was very happily walking by, smiling to herself, and the dog asked her, "What is the matter?" She said, last night, in my dreams, it rained. And it rained rats. The dog said, listen, you stupid cat. You don't understand a thing about dream psychology. I was also here last night, and I can testify it rained, but it rained cats, not rats. That seems to be accurate enough. Dogs can dream of rats raining. But the proverb is, it rained cats and dogs. Who would be dreaming about dogs? Except this small anecdote in Aesop, there is no reference in the whole literature of the world. But it seems in almost all the languages, somehow the proverb has taken roots. One thing is certain, whatever the roots are, no roots, but the proverb is very expressive. The rain last night was an immense joy, not only to the earth, thirsty, waiting for it, but to the trees, and to you all, these small experiences can release in you the ultimate experience, just the beauty of them, the splendor, unexpected, unpredictable. And suddenly you are surrounded with such tremendous peace, silence, and not empty, full of songs and dances, and the whole existence rejoicing. as one goes deeper on the path, as one releases oneself from the prison of his own mind, ordinary experiences start taking extraordinary colors. Just an ordinary flower looked silently becomes a wondrous experience. What a marvel that a small flower can exist with beautiful colors, with a little fragrance of its own, a individuality of its own. The greatest philosopher cannot fathom the meaning of the smallest flower. But the mystic is not a philosopher. He does not bother to fathom meanings, to measure meanings, to think about things. He simply rejoices with them. When it rains, he dances. He joins hands with the rain. When trees are rejoicing, becoming fresh, one starts feeling the same freshness. Only one thing is needed. And that is the sutra this morning, release. Tahui is intending a simple thing to be conveyed to you, that you are the prison, you are the prisoner, and you are who has imprisoned you. You are playing a game with yourself. One part of you functions as the jailer, another part functions as the jail, and your innermost core is crushed between these two parts. You become a prisoner. Not that somebody else is making you a prisoner. It would have been a great calamity if man's consciousness was imprisoned by somebody else. Then freedom was not in your own hands. Then freedom was in somebody else's hands. It is marvelous that you are yourself imprisoning your being. Hence, the release can happen instantly. It is only a question of little understanding, just a little intelligence. The sutra is very beautiful. It says, in our family, to whom Tahui is referring as our family, you are included in it. All those who are involved in this great affair of searching, seeking, trying to penetrate into the mysteries of existence, they may have been past, they may be present, they may be in the future, but they really constitute the only family worth calling family. There is a physical, biological family, your parents, your brothers, your sisters, your husbands, your wives, your children. But that is a very superficial phenomenon, accidental. There is a deeper family which has nothing to do with your biological origins, but is concerned with your ultimate search. It is spiritual. It is not accidental, it is very essential. Once you become aware, you will be suddenly amazed that all the Buddhas of the past and all the Buddhas of the future and all the Buddhas of the present constitute a single family. Because their experience is the same. Their truth is the same. Their life is surrounded with the same fragrance. They in no way differ from each other. If you have come across a single Buddha, you have come across all of them. He contains all of them. He represents all of them. Tahui is immensely beautiful to mention it as a family. In our family, There is indeed a subtle marvel not transmitted. Everybody in the family knows about it, but nobody says anything about it. Everybody in the family has experienced it, but remains absolutely silent about it. Because knowing the ultimate is also to know simultaneously that it is inexpressible. Those who try to express it are those who don't know. This is the marvel. Those who know, they don't try to express it. And those who don't know, they try to express it. The ignorant are very articulate. They say things about God, about heaven and about hell, and the ones who know are utterly silent about the mysteries of life. You can know whether a man has experienced something or not by his being silent about the ultimate matters. He may indicate, he may give few hints, he may create devices in which you can also awaken to the experience, but he will not say a single word. Because of this fact, Zen has strange ways of transmitting. The truth has always been transmitted. It has never been said. It is more like a gesture of the hand, more like a smile on the lips, more like a twinkle in the eyes. But it is never a word. In our family there is indeed a subtle marvel, not transmitted. It would not help even if the sky became my mouth, and grass, trees, pebbles, and stones all emitted light to help me expound the truth. Thus we believe that this thing cannot be transmitted and cannot be studied. It requires one's own realization and enlightenment. This has to be understood as the very fundamental that if you are ready, open, receptive, alert, you will get it. And you will get in strange ways, which have no logical relationship, no causal relationship. Many intellectuals in the world who have become aware of Zen in the past century in the beginning was simply laughing at the craziness of these people, because it does not make sense to their reason. Somebody hits you and you become enlightened. The reason cannot believe it. There seems to be no reason why a certain hit will destroy all your ignorance. Even today, Zen is being studied in the West. On a vast scale, it has become one of the universal phenomena. But the very idea of studying it goes against it. You cannot study Zen. You can have it, you cannot get it from someone else. And the simple reason is because you have already got it. It is just a question of forgetfulness. It will be helpful for you to remind, perhaps in everybody's life there are moments when you know that a certain name, a certain person, a certain face is known to you. The expression exists in all the languages that it is just on the tip of my tongue. Then who is preventing you? Why don't you tell it? You know perfectly well it is there. But it needs some release, and perhaps a hit may do. You have only forgotten, perhaps a good hit will help you to forget to remember it, because the effort to remember a thing makes your mind tense. And the more you try to remember, the more tense you become. And tension means narrowing of the mind. It becomes too narrow that nothing can pass through it. A good hit and the mind opens. Because you have forgotten that you were trying to remember something. And suddenly, that which was on your tongue is no more a secret. Now you know it fully well. Something like this has been happening in transmitting on a higher and a deeper level, but it is not steady. There is no way to make Zen a subject of studies in the universities. That will be the very stupid act. There is no way to find someone who has it who can give it to you. It is not that the people who have it are miserly, are not generous, just the contrary. They are the most generous people. If they could give it to you, they would not have bothered whether you want it or not. They would have given it to you. But the very nature of the experience is such that it does not come from outside. It happens within you. But the people who have experienced it are in constant search of creating a situation around you that what is asleep becomes awake. Once you understand it, Zen will not look crazy. It will not look irrational. It will look certainly suprarational, beyond the capacities of the mind. Thus we believe that this thing cannot be transmitted and cannot be studied. It requires one's own realization and enlightenment. It has become more difficult because Hindus, Mohammedans, Christians, Jews have created a very difficult situation for millions of people. They have been giving the idea to people that it will be delivered to you by a savior. It will be given to you by a messenger. All that you have to do is to believe and wait. Jesus will redeem you. Our Muhammad, our Krishna, what I want to point it out very clearly, the idea that somebody else, it does not matter who, Jesus, Moses, Krishna or Muhammad, the idea that somebody else will do it on your behalf is absolutely wrong. But this idea has prevailed and it was very easy to accept it. It was very simple to be imprisoned by it, because somebody else is taking the responsibility. In this world, people very easily are ready to give the responsibility to somebody else. They think by giving away responsibility, they are free of the burden. They are absolutely wrong. Responsibility is freedom. And the moment you give responsibility to somebody else, you have also given your freedom. Now 2,000 years have passed and Christians are waiting for the Savior to come. And I tell you, he is never going to come. For the simple reason that what he has promised, he cannot deliver. Krishna has promised that he will be coming. But it's strange that people don't think that while these people were here, why they did not redeem the humanity? What is the point of postponing it for the future? Next time when they will come. People were as much in misery as they are now. People were as much ignorant as they are now. So what was the reason to postpone? Jesus could have redeemed the whole world. Krishna Krishna could have enlightened everybody. But it was a very subtle game. They took the responsibility and helped you to remain a prisoner till they come back. Just go on praying. One day he is going to come. This has taken away not your responsibility but your freedom. It has taken away your very individuality and your uniqueness. I love Gautam Buddha for the simple reason that he is the first man in the long history who denied to take the responsibility of redeeming anybody. He seems to be the most courageous man. Because it is so easy to gather followers if you take responsibility. Rather than taking responsibility, he was saying that there is no way for anybody else to redeem you. Let it sink deep in your hearts that only you are capable of awakening. Because only you are capable of falling asleep. Nobody else is responsible for your sleep. How can somebody else be responsible for your awakening? All those who have promised you to redeem have humiliated you. They have reduced you below human beings. It is not a coincidence that Jesus goes on calling himself the sheeper and you the sheep. And I sometimes think that not even a single man stood up and said, that this is very insulting. Not that people must not have felt it, but it was very cheap. And the fellow is taking all the responsibility, it is good. So we need not bother about it. We can go round and round into our trivia and he will take care about our spirituality. It was a good chance to get rid of the great affair. it seems hurting. But I cannot say anything which is not true. All these people behaved more like businessmen. They were more concerned in having more and more customers. Gautam Buddha seems to be the single man who is not interested in having followers, who is not interested in being a shepherd, who is not interested in reducing you into a sheep. On the contrary, his whole life he insisted only one thing, that you are just like me. The difference is very small. One day I was asleep. Today I am awake. Today you are asleep. Tomorrow you may be awake. And if you are intelligent, you can be awake this very moment. Buddha gives alone the respect to individuality and human beings which nobody has ever given. He denied God for the simple reason because God cannot be accepted . The very acceptance of God as a creator destroys the whole beauty of humanity. Then you are just a puppet in the hands of a God who seems to be whimsical. For no reason he created you, and for no reason he can decreate you. He removed God completely from the vision of the people who understood him, that God and man cannot exist together. No coexistence is possible. Because God is basically a dictatorial concept, absolute dictatorship. And man cannot raise his head in freedom if there is a God. You can hear people saying that without the will of God, not even a leaf moves. Then this whole existence becomes an imprisonment, a great concentration camp, and God becomes a million times magnified Adolf Hitler. Gautam Buddha
rather than talking about hypothetical nonsense, takes the existential problem directly. The problem is your release. And the problem is simple, because the release is within your own hands. You have just forgotten who you are. Just by telling you who you are, you will not understand. And the danger is that by telling you who you are, you may become a parrot. You may start, in India you will find the whole country full of parrots. Everybody is talking about the soul, enlightenment, awakening, nirvana. They have all been repeating beautiful sentences from scriptures. Buddha does not want to make you a parrot either. Hence, he says, there is no way to give you the truth. For the simple reason, because you already have it. So all that can be done is somehow create situations to wake you up. If it is needed to give you a good sleep, at the right moment, anybody's sleep won't do. Only a master and only a disciple who has been working on the way for years or maybe for lives comes to a point just on the boundary line that a little puss and he has reached to the other source. So there are disciplines in Buddhism, but those disciplines are not going to give you the truth. They are only going to bring you to the point where some insightful, compassionate master will be needed to create a device which releases you. Have you seen small birds? They see their parents flying all around they also flutter their wings, but they are afraid naturally because they have never flown. And they cannot believe that getting out of their cozy nest is safe. The vast sky and no experience of flying, although they are capable of flying, they have the wings, and they will rejoice to fly in the sky under the warm sun. Finally, the parents of those small birds have to push them. That is a device. That is a Zen device. But the parents have to wait till their wings are strong enough. They make many ways which to me seem to be exactly what the Zen master does for the disciple. The mother will fly in front of them, showing that if she can fly, why you cannot fly? And they flutter their wings to gain confidence, to become acquainted that they also have wings, that's true. But to take the jump, they come to the very corner of their nest. They weigh all pros and cons. There is a great longing to take the jump, but there is also a fear, because they are going into the unknown. Who knows, they may fall flat on the earth and be finished. The mother goes to the other tree, and from there she starts calling them, come on. It is irresistible. They try, but some invisible boundary prevents them. And when the parents see that now they are perfectly capable, it is only the fear that is preventing them. One day, without informing them, suddenly a Zen puss. Of course, in the beginning they flutter in a haphazard way. But they know now that although they are not flying as they should, but they can keep themselves afloat in the air. And then the mother starts calling them from far away trees. First they go to very close trees, then they start going to farther trees, and then one day
they are gone forever into the infinite. They never come back. Then the whole sky has become theirs.
I have always thought that the Zen devices of transmitting must have come from such source. Zen monasteries are in the forests. Some genius master may have seen the situation of a bird being pushed. There is no logical sense. You cannot convince the world intellectually. And a push is not a rational way. Be sure to remember the words of a previous day. In principle, it is sudden enlightenment. In principle only, it is sudden enlightenment. In practice, in reality, the small bird has to grow strong wings, wait for the right moment, and has to be under the protection of a right master. Any hurry can be fatal. If somebody is awakened before his ripening time, before his maturity, that enlightenment can be dangerous. He may not be able to survive it. It may be too much. He was not yet capable to contain it, to absorb it, to relish it. So in principle, Tahui is right. It is sudden enlightenment. Intellectuals all over the world have asked, if it is sudden, then why it is not happening to us? Then why somebody has to meditate for years if it is sudden? They have not understood that in principle it is sudden. When it will happen suddenly. But before that happening, a certain maturity is needed. That means enlightenment in itself is sudden, but its preparation is gradual. This is a tremendous synthesis which Tahui is bringing to two conflicting schools. One says it is gradual, one says it is sudden, and they go on fighting for centuries, arguing against each other, they cannot see that gradualness and suddenness are not necessarily opposite. Gradualness can be a preparation for suddenness. They can't see that both can be part of a synthetic process. Taking advantage of enlightenment to clear everything away, in the event, but in actual event, phenomena are suddenly removed, but adjusted gradually. It takes time, different times for different people, according to their love, according to their trust, according to their longing, according to their passion, according to their readiness to risk all, the time element will differ. Mahakashyapa was the first to become enlightened amongst Gautama Buddha's disciples. And he was the most silent person. Never asked a question. Never even came close to Gautama Buddha. He had his own tree. He will sit under his own tree. It has become known that that place is reserved for Mahakashyapa. He does not speak, he does not question, he simply sits under that tree. Not far away from Gautama Buddha. And amongst 10,000 disciples, everybody was asking, and many were asking, Mahakashyapa, why don't you ask? And he will simply smile. And one day Gautama Buddha came with a lotus flower in his hand, and that day was the beginning of Zen. He was supposed to give a discourse as usual, but rather than giving a discourse, he sat there in utter silence of 10,000 disciples, just looking at the rose flower. Moments passed. People started becoming restless. What has happened? In the first place, he has never come with anything in his hand. In the second place, he seems to have completely forgotten for what he has come. Thirdly, it is strange that he goes on seeing at that lotus flower accepted that it is beautiful, but it does not mean that you have to go on looking forever and forever. Hours passed, people became really agitated. Something has to be done. And at that very moment, Mahakashyapa laughed. Gautama Buddha looked at Mahakashyapa, called him close, and said, "This flower belongs to you. Take care of it. This is the first transmission without words. People looked in amazement what has happened. In the first place, to laugh in the presence of the master without any reason is not courteous, it is not respectful. Secondly, there was nothing to laugh at. Thirdly, what has been transmitted, all that people can see is a rose, is a lotus flower. But Mahakashyapa became the first Zen master. He is rarely mentioned in the Buddhist scriptures because he rarely speaks. And because he has received the transmission without words, nobody knows what he has received. When finally forced by other disciples, older, more prominent, Mahakashyapa said, "I have not received, I have only recognized." In that great silence, when you were all becoming restless, I started becoming restful. My silence became deeper to a point that I suddenly saw that it is so ridiculous to search for truth because I am the truth. At that very moment, I could not contain, and I laughed. The flower was given to me as a confirmation that your laughter means you have opened your wings in the sky. You are released. When one comes to a master, he has so much garbage which the master has to remove gradually. Because to him it is garbage, to the disciple it is knowledge. To him it is his chains, to the disciple these are his ornaments. So it takes time. The master goes on throwing the garbage out and the disciple goes on collecting it back. Hiding into deeper places where the master cannot reach. Unless the recognition where the master and the disciple stand in the same space, then anything will do, just a little push. Whether you are walking, standing, sitting or lying down, you must not forget. Must not forget what? Simply must not forget. Simply remain alert and aware. Not of anything special. Not of any object, but just alert, as if something great is going to happen. You don't know what, as if a great guest is going to come and you are standing on your doors waiting. You don't know who is coming. You don't know whether he is coming or not. You don't have any confirmation. But greatly alert, you are standing on the door, not knowing for what. A pure awareness. You don't have to seek special excellence or extraordinary wonders besides. On the path, the greatest hindrance is that you can find special qualities, extraordinary powers, miracles, mysterious experiences, and you can get lost into all that. It was not your search. You got aside the path. Remember not to seek special excellence or extraordinary wonders besides. Master Sui Lao asked Mata Su, what is the true meaning of the coming from the West. This is a special way of asking the question, what is the true meaning of Bodhidharma coming from the West? Because India is to China the West. What was the special reason of Bodhidharma coming to China? In other words, the question is, what he has come to transmit so far, it took him 3 years to reach, and it took him 9 years to transmit what it was. Matasu then knocked him down with a kick to the chest. Sui Lao was greatly enlightened. He got up, clapping his hands and laughing loudly, and said, "How extraordinary! How wonderful! Instantly, on the tip of a hair, I have understood the root source of myriad states of concentration and countless subtle meanings." Then he bowed and withdrew. Afterwards, he would tell the assembly, "From the time I took Matasu's kick up until now, I have not stopped laughing." Remember that Master Sui Lao is not an ordinary disciple. He is already recognized as a great master, although he is only a great teacher. But the difference is very subtle and can be known only by those who are beyond the master and the teacher. He was known as master himself, but he was not just a teacher. He has gone gradually closer and closer to be a master, but he needed the last push. He was fluttering his wings. He was waiting just on the verge flying into the sky. Master Sui Lao asked Matasu, and Matasu is one of the strangest masters in the assembly of strange masters of Zen. He is asking a simple question, why Bodhidharma had to come to China, what special transmission was there that he has to deliver. Matasu then knocked him down with a kick to the chest, Sui Lao was greatly enlightened. Now, incidents like this make intellectuals confused. What has happened? Matasu has shown him that Bodhidharma has come to kill your ego. To release you from the fear of death. He kicked him in the chest, knocked him down. It was so strange and so sudden, it was not expected. He has asked a simple routine question. Any intellectual could have explained why Bodhidharma had come to China to spread Buddhism, to spread the message of the great master. But nobody could have thought that Matasu will do this to the poor questioner. And it was so sudden and so unpredictable. But it is sudden and unpredictable to us. Matasu could have seen the ripeness of the man, the maturity that he needs just a small push. That this time should not be lost. His kicking him on the chest and knocking him down may have completely stopped the functioning of his mind. Because it was so unexpected and so strange. In that stopping of the mind is the release. Suddenly, the goose is out. He became enlightened. He got up, clapping his hands and laughing loudly and said, "How extraordinary! How wonderful!" Instantly, on the tip of a hair, I have understood the root source of myriad states of concentration and countless subtle meanings. Then he bowed in deep respect and withdrew. Afterwards he would tell the assembly, he became himself a great master. From the time I took Matasu's kick up until now, I have not stopped laughing. How one can stop laughing? This great affair is so ridiculous. It is just like a dog in a winter morning in the warm sun, sitting silently looking at his tail, becomes interested to catch it, tries in many ways, and the more he tries, the more he becomes challenged, because the tail jumps immediately. Faster he jumps, faster the tail jumps, and the difference remains the same. Standing by the side, you will laugh that this is stupid dog. That tail belongs to him, there is no need to catch hold of it, and there is no way. Your enlightenment belongs to you. There is no need to seek and search. You are it. It is not an achievement. It is only a recognition. Hence the laughing. Naturally, people who have not been accustomed with the tradition of Zen will be shocked by such a behavior. If I suddenly knock Manisha here and now, although she is not yet right, but if I am not, will you understand? You will think this man has gone mad. You will think we already knew that he is mad. Now he has crossed all the boundaries. And from tomorrow, those who sit in front will remain alert at any moment. And this is going to happen. Because I am not going to leave this world unless I have made more people enlightened than Gautam Buddha. And I am watching who is growing wings, who is becoming ready to be nagged. So don't be surprised. And when somebody gets nagged, rejoice the happening. The man has become enlightened. But people who are not in a deep resonance with Zen will not be able to understand it. Hindus or Mohammedans or Christians or Jews, because there is nothing like that in their whole history. Their whole history is more or less just intellectual gymnastics. Zen is absolutely existential. And the master is not only to teach you certain doctrines. He has to release you from the prison that you have made yourself. And whatever arbitrary, expedient methods are needed, he is not going to be worried what people will think about it. He will do them. There has never been more compassionate beings than Zen masters. It is the great compassion of Matasu. Otherwise, who cares? He could have just answered the question and the whole thing was over. He took so much effort, hit the man, knocked him down, and it is not only Matasu who is compassionate. Sui Lao also shows tremendous understanding. If it was happening to somebody who was not ready, he would have started fighting or would have become angry that this is absolutely absurd. I am asking a question and you are hitting me. But he took the hit in the same way as Mahakashyapa has taken the lotus flower. Even with more beauty, how extraordinary, how wonderful. And with great reverence, he bowed down and withdrew. No other question. Everything is solved. He has been kicked out of the nest. His wings are open now in the sky. Now he can fly across the sun. Now there are no more any boundaries. And he remembered the event his whole life, even when he became a great, respected master. That the greatest thing in my life was the kick that Matasu gave me. I have not stopped laughing since then. C. something that is not visible to the eyes must have happened in that moment. As Mata Suhich and nagged him, perhaps, most probably, he may have knocked him out of his body. And he must have seen the whole scene standing outside his own body. The first experience of being outside your own body is one of the most exquisite, sweet, marvelous experiences. You are released. Your body is your prison. Your mind is your prison. Tahui has named the sutra rightly as the release. Get ready and be prepared. It is a totally different world. Than the days of Matasu. But I would like to make that beautiful time and those beautiful incidents again contemporary. But it all depends on you. If you are gradually dropping all your garbage, becoming more alert, not forgetting for a single moment, walking, sitting, working, lying down, a constant undercurrent of remembrance, then the day is not far away when I will start knocking down people. There is no necessity to actually knock down somebody. Because between me and Matasu there is a long time, and I have got more refined methods. He is in a way primitive. I do my own kind of kicking and knocking. So don't wait that actually I am going to hit on your chest. There is no need. I have developed more subtle methods. But you have to be ready anyway.